music on the radio on the nightstand between them, Carmen gave them each a goodnight kiss, went back upstairs, and checked on Laura and Mary. Laura was sitting up in bed, wearing a gray T-shirt three sizes too big for her, and reading her Bible by the light of the bedside lamp. Mary was curled on her side, a mere lump beneath the covers.
"Is she asleep?"
Carmen whispered. Laura shook her head.
"I don't think so. She just..."
She looked over at her sister.
"I don't think she wants to talk to anybody." "Oh. Well, how are you?"
She shrugged, then hesitated a moment before speaking.
"Aunt Carmen, remember what I said about this house? About how it makes me feel?"
Here it comes, Carmen thought.
"Yes, I remember. And you think those sounds tonight confirm your feelings?"
She nodded.
"And I heard what you said to Uncle Al about that woman upstairs. Aunt Carm, I think there's something really weird about this house, even if you don't believe me."
"Well, Laura," she sat on the side of the bed and touched her niece's arm,
"even though I don't like to admit it, I'm beginning to think you just might be right."
She nodded toward the open Bible on Laura's lap.
"But that'll help. That always helps."
"I know,"
Laura said. Before leaving the room, Carmen went to the cot where Mary was curled up, motionless and silent. She placed a hand gently on Mary's shoulder and said,
"You asleep, honey?"
Mary shook her head against the pillow.
"Are you okay?"
She nodded against the pillow.
"You're sure?"
Mary rolled over and faced Carmen.
"Are you mad at me 'cause I want to leave, Aunt Carmen?"
"Of course not. I understand perfectly. I'd probably want to leave, too, if I were you. Tell you what, you just get a good night's sleep, and Aunt Lacey will be here to get you in the morning. Okay?"
She nodded and rolled back over. Carmen waved at Laura as she left the room and went to Peter's room where Stephanie was sleeping. The lights were on, and Stephanie was sitting up in bed.
"I don't feel sleepy, Mom,"
she said.
"Well, would you like to look at a book? Or color? You can listen to music if you keep it low. You want the radio on?"
"Oh, I think I'll just color a little while."
"Okay, sweetheart. You do that."
When she left Stephanie, she felt better about going to bed, too. She was more worried about everyone else than she was about getting any sleep herself. In the bedroom, she found Al already asleep. That made her feel better. She couldn't imagine any conversation that night being a good one, not after the incident with the green woman upstairs. Carmen undressed, brushed her teeth, and put on her nightgown, then quietly crawled into bed, careful not to disturb Al from his sleep. Laura was reading the 23rd Psalm, the most encouraging and comforting part of the Bible to her, when she thought she felt something moving over her bare legs beneath the covers. She frowned and kicked her legs, stopped, waited, and felt nothing. She went back to reading. It happened again. Something crept right up her left thigh, and she began to kick. It stopped. Goosebumps crawled over her skin. It didn't feel like a twitching nerve or even an insect. It felt like fingers. When it happened again, it started at the very top of her thigh and moved upward rapidly. She gasped loudly when she felt the sensation of fingers pressing between her legs with great determination. Laura sat up straighter and threw back the covers. There was nothing there but her legs, which were spread and trembling. Once again she felt fingers between her thighs, probing and, a second later, entering her, even as she watched and saw nothing. Laura shot out of bed and ripped off the blankets and sheet with her. She searched the bed carefully, went over every inch of the mattress, searched the folds of the sheet, the blankets, but there was nothing in the bed. There was no sign that anything had been there. She considered waking Aunt Carmen, but what good would it do? She had no proof that something had touched her. If she told anyone, they would think she'd fallen asleep and had been dreaming. Plus, it would be embarrassing to bring up. Instead, Laura put her pillows on the floor, pulled the covers down with her, and lay down beside the bed. It was a long time before Laura went to sleep, and even then, she had some very ugly nightmares. Stephanie was coloring the pictures in her coloring book when she saw something move silently and uneventfully through her room. She was first aware of it as a dark movement in the corner of her eye and looked up from her coloring book to see a shapeless blob that closely resembled a dark shadow, except for the fact that it was moving out of the wall and passing through the center of the room, a shadow cast by nothing, dark and yet transparent, its globular shape changing liquidly as it moved, until it passed through the bedroom door smoothly, without a sound, and was gone. Stephanie showed no reaction, but she could feel her heart beating rapidly. She considered waking someone, telling them, but why? Stephen tried to tell them for so long, and they wouldn't listen to him. Why would anyone listen to her? She reached over and turned on the radio, cuddled down beneath her covers, heart still pounding in her throat, and continued to color the picture in her book. Michael lay in bed listening to the slow, regular breathing of his brother, wishing he could fall asleep too. He'd left on a small nightlight in the corner because he just didn't feel very comfortable about being in the dark tonight. He was staring up at the shadowy ceiling when he first heard the whispers. He couldn't understand what the whispering voices were saying. He couldn't pinpoint the source of the whispering, but it was definitely there. With wide eyes, he looked all around the room as he lay rigid in his bed. The whispering sounded urgent. One voice spoke, then another, as if they were exchanging secrets of pressing importance. He stared at nothing for a long time, listening. Then it stopped. He wondered if he should go upstairs and wake his parents, but then he remembered how Stephen's stories had been received and decided against it. Instead, he just lay there in bed, unable to sleep, waiting for the whispering to start again. Then Peter began to scream, as if he were dying, writhing in his bed, as if in pain. Carmen sat up in bed, startled from sleep by her son's screams. She reached over and shook Al, trying hard to waken him. "Al, wake up!" she hissed. "Come on, wake up!" But he didn't budge. "Al, get up!" Nothing. She stopped and listened. The screaming had stopped, but she heard faint, muffled voices. She got up and went downstairs to find Michael and Peter talking. "What's wrong, sweetheart?" she asked, hurrying to Peter's bed. He looked up at her, his eyes puffy, cheeks striped by tears, and said,
"I was stung. Something stung me like bees, like when I was stung by that bee."
"Were you dreaming, honey?"
No, I wasn't dreaming."
She pulled back his covers and unbuttoned his pajama top to look at him. She saw nothing, no marks, no welts.
"I don't see anything, Peter," she said quietly.
"But something stung me," he shouted. "Something stung me over and over."
"I don't see anything, sweetheart. Maybe you were just dreaming."
His eyes squinted and his lips curled upward as he began to cry.
"I'm sorry, baby, but I don't see anything."
He just continued to cry silently, tears trickling down his cheeks.
"Would you like me to sit here with you until you fall asleep again?"
He nodded silently.
"Okay. I promise I won't go away until I know you've gone back to sleep. Okay?"
Another nod. Carmen looked over at Michael, who was sitting on the side of his bed, watching with concern.
"I'll stay here a while," she whispered.
"Good,"
Michael said with a nod, slowly getting back into bed.
"'Cause, Mom, whether you think so or not, there's something really weird about this house. And I'll get to sleep a lot easier if I know you're here."
Carmen smiled and nodded and whispered,
"Okay, honey."
But deep inside, Michael's words made her feel as cold as ice. Carmen awoke suddenly at a little before 5 in the morning, and was unable to go back to sleep. The house was quiet. Nothing had happened to disturb her sleep. She got up, put on her robe, went to the kitchen and made some tea. She went through her stack of magazines in the living room until she found the one Tanya had given her. She opened it to the article on Ed and Lorraine Warren and read it carefully and slowly as she sipped her tea at the dining room table. Later, a while before she knew everyone would start to get up, Carmen started a big breakfast. As usual, it wasn't long before the aroma of eggs, bacon, and coffee had wafted through the entire house, and one by one, sleepy-eyed and yawning, everyone followed their noses to the dining room table. But no one spoke. There were no good mornings, not even any sleep-mumbled greetings. Even Peter, who was usually the most boisterous member of the family so early in the morning, was silent. An invisible dark cloud grew over the table as everyone ate in silence. Tension built as forks and knives clanked against plates and jaws chewed behind tight lips. Finally, Carmen put down her fork, swallowed her food, and locked her hands together beneath her chin, elbows on the table's edge. She spent a moment running her tongue back and forth between her upper lip and front teeth, trying to buy some time. And then,
"You know, since last night I've been thinking..."
"Yeah, I know, and I don't want to hear it," Al said quietly without looking up from his plate.
"No, please, just give me a second here."
She cleared her throat.
"I've been thinking that maybe, maybe we were a little quick to, you know, punish Stephen the way we did. To dismiss what he was saying about the house. About there being something, you know, something weird here."
"Yeah, that was it," Al said, his voice more stern. "That was what I didn't want to hear. And I don't want to hear any more of it, understand? That's just plain bullshit. Stephen was sick. He is sick. And now he's being treated. He just spooked us with all his stories, is all."
"Then how do you explain those sounds last night?" Carmen asked.
"I don't know, but I'm gonna look into it. There's gotta be some explanation."
With her hands in her lap, staring down at her plate, Laura said in a near whisper,
"I kept feeling something touch me. My legs and...
She suddenly sucked in a breath and closed her eyes a moment, then lifted her head and looked at them.
"It was a hand. Touching me like a man would touch me, only rough and angry. I saw something move through my room last night,"
Stephanie said while chewing a piece of bacon, speaking in that casual, offhanded tone that only a child can use when talking about something so bizarre.
"It was like a shadow, a big shadow blob. Didn't make any noise, just moved in through the wall and out through the door."
Al dropped his fork angrily onto his plate and stopped chewing, his eyes darting from one to the other of them at the table.
"Look, I'm not in the mood for this, okay?" he whispered unsteadily. "I can't wake up this morning. I feel like I've been drugged, so just lay off, okay?"
He picked up his fork again and continued to eat.
"So that's why you wouldn't wake up last night, huh?"
Carmen asked.
"What?" "Last night. When Peter started screaming, I tried to wake you, but you wouldn't budge. He said he was being stung."
"It hurt, Dad,"
Peter piped up.
"Like bees. It was like bees was stinging me all over."
"You were dreaming,"
Al barked, making Peter flinch and fall silent.
"I heard whispers in the room," Michael said timidly. "Voices whispering somewhere in the room."
He threw the fork down this time, pushing away from the table and slapping his napkin down beside his plate.
"God damn it," he snapped. "I'm going to work."
He left the room, said goodbye to no one, and in a little while they heard the front door slam. Eventually, everyone continued eating, and as they did, Carmen said very quietly,
"Don't worry, kids. I believe you. And sooner or later, your father will too."
Nothing happened again until that evening, as if whatever presence had taken up residence in the house only came out in the later part of the day, when the daylight was replaced by long, dark shadows and the moon was making its way into the sky. Dinner was over, and Carmen was clearing the table, where Al was still sitting, drinking a beer and reading the paper. Stephanie and Peter were watching television in the living room, and Michael was, as usual, in his room doing homework. Mary had gone to her Aunt Lacey's to stay. And Laura was in the bathroom. She'd hung her robe on the back of the door and was standing before the mirror in her bra and panties, brushing her hair slowly. She could hear the sound of the television set and the children's voices in the living room. She heard Aunt Carmen's muffled voice from the dining room. Then as she ran the brush through her hair again and again, she felt something tug on her bra strap from behind, as if someone were trying to snap the strap against her back. But when she looked in the mirror, of course, she saw no one behind her. She spun around, but she was alone in the bathroom. She didn't move for a moment, frowning and suddenly feeling very cold. Then she continued to brush her hair. A coarse hand slid between her legs and clutched her inner thigh. Laura gasped and shouted, "Hey!" She spun around and jerked herself away from the hand, or what felt like a hand. But it stayed with her, groping thick fingers pressing upward against the material of her panties, clutching at the elastic around her upper thighs. Another hand moved up over her stomach to her breasts, squeezing them roughly, painfully, then curling its fingers beneath Laura's bra and pulling.
"Help! Please, God, help!"
Laura screamed, throwing herself at the bathroom door. She turned the knob and pulled. It opened a few inches, but almost as if someone were pulling it hard from the other side, the knob snapped from her hands and the door slammed shut loudly.
"Aunt Carmen!"
Laura shrieked as her panties tore away from her, as her bra snapped and was flung to the floor.
"Somebody! Uncle Al, please! Help me!"
Al let the newspaper slip to the dining room table and put down his beer, while Carmen dropped a casserole dish into the sink and both of them dashed toward the bathroom.
"What is it? What's the matter?"
Al cried, hurrying down the hall. Peter and Stephanie hurried in from the living room and Michael pounded up the stairs as Al tried the door. It wouldn't open.
"Laura, you all right?" he asked. "Get away from the door and I'll—"
"I'm not by the door,"
she screamed in a ragged, sobbing voice.
"Help me! Help me, please, God! Please help me!"
Al took a few steps back, then bounded forward, slamming his shoulder against the bathroom door with a heavy grunt. It did no good. But before he could do it a second time, the explosive pounding started again, rattling the windows and jittering the pictures on the walls. There were no pauses between them this time. They came again and again and again. Deafening, so loud and deep that they could feel the sounds in their bones. All the lights in the house began to flash off and on simultaneously.
"Mommy!"
Peter screamed, pressing himself against Carmen and hugging her legs. Stephanie joined them on Carmen's other side and cried,
"What's happening?"
Michael simply huddled against the wall, eyes wide, fists clenched.
"I don't know what's happening, sweetheart,"
Carmen shouted, putting her arms around Stephanie and Peter.
"But you'll be all right, I promise."
Al threw himself against the door again, and again. But suddenly he screamed in pain, doubled over, clutching his stomach, and fell to the floor. Carmen dropped to her knees beside him with a gasp.
"What, Al? What's the matter?"
"I've been stabbed,"
he said through clenched teeth, his voice raspy.
"My God, I've been stabbed."
Carmen reached for his hands and gently pulled them away from his stomach, expecting blood or some sign of injury. She saw nothing. The thunderous pounding continued, and the lights went on flashing and flashing. In the bathroom, Laura was still screaming.
"You're okay, Al," Carmen said, leaning close to him. "You haven't been stabbed. There's nothing there."
She felt him relax against her for a moment. Then, moving cautiously, he got up, reached for the doorknob again, and everything stopped. The pounding silenced. The lights went out, plunging them into shadowy darkness. And the bathroom door slowly swung open.
"Oh, my God,"
Carmen breathed, hurrying into the bathroom. Laura was stretched out on the counter, naked, legs spread, one arm dangling over the counter's edge.
"Oh, God, Laura, what happened?"
Laura's shoulders quaked as she cried silently.
"Hands,"
she whispered.
"Hands all over me, ripped off my underwear. They felt me."
"Whose hands?"
Laura shook her head.
"I could only feel them."
"I'm calling the police,"
Al said from the hall. Carmen spun around, stepped out of the bathroom, and hissed angrily.
"The police? What are the police gonna do? Arrest somebody? A ghost, maybe? You still think there's some damned explanation for all of this, Al? 'Cause if you do, you're the one who's crazy. We don't need the police here. We need a priest. And we're gonna get one."
There was one more tremendous, thunderous pound, and then a voice that seemed to ooze from every inch of the darkness around them, declared in a guttural, raspy tone,
"There is no one who can help you. You are mine."
20. A Skeptical Blessing. Carmen called Father Wheatley first thing in the morning. She'd slept little, and although nothing more had happened for the rest of the night after the lights came back on, Carmen was just as jittery as if it had all happened just a few minutes ago. So it was difficult for her to give Father Wheatley a coherent explanation of the problem. She stuttered and stammered as she tried to make him understand that something supernatural, something evil, had invaded their house, and that their son Stephen, now in a mental hospital for hearing voices and behaving so strangely, had tried to tell them that all along. But Wheatley could make little sense of it all. It was very obvious to him, however, that something was wrong, even though he wasn't quite sure what it was yet. He promised her he'd be over the moment he could tear himself away, probably in an hour, two at the most. Al went to work reluctantly. He didn't want to leave Carmen and Laura and Peter alone. Carmen would rather he stay too, but they both knew he couldn't afford to miss work. Stephanie and Michael went out to meet the bus, both quiet and tense, and, until it came to get them, they stood by the road looking back at the house again and again. As Carmen waited for Father Wheatley to arrive, she kept Peter close to her at all times. Laura stayed close as well. She didn't want to be alone. They were sitting on the sofa with Peter kneeling before them and playing with his Merlin game when Carmen said quietly,
"You know, if you'd like, Laura, you can go over to your Aunt Lacey's with Mary."
Laura frowned and shook her head slowly.
"No, I don't think so. I just don't feel as comfortable with Aunt Lacey as I do with you and Uncle Al. Besides, I want to help."
Carmen was surprised.
"Even with all this?"
"Well,"
Laura shrugged,
"I just want you to know that if you decide that's what you want to do, it's fine with us, really. We'll understand. So will you let us know?"
She nodded.
"Yeah, I'll let you know."
When Father Wheatley arrived, Carmen had the front door open before he'd even come up the walk. She ushered him into the living room anxiously and seated him in Al's recliner, all the while whispering to him,
"Oh, I'm so glad you came, Father. You don't know how badly we need you here. I'm so glad you came."
Once they were settled, Father Wheatley asked,
"So, exactly what is the problem?"
Carmen told him. She told him everything. It spilled from her in a flood because she'd been holding it back for so long. But as she spoke, she saw the expression on his face change gradually. And she knew what that change meant. Disbelief. When she was finished, she waited, hoping for a positive response, but not really expecting one. Father Wheatley, who had been leaning forward in the recliner as he listened to her, settled back with a sigh, and his frown relaxed. Half his mouth turned up in a reluctant smile, and he said softly,
"Carmen, I'm going to say the first thing that comes to my mind. Your entire family has been through a great deal. Stephen's serious illness, as you yourself told me, put a great deal of strain on all of you," he added quickly. "Please, don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying this is all a figment of your imagination or anything like that. I think it's perfectly understandable. Stress can do the most, well, the most incredible things to people. And I'm saying this from experience. Both my own and the experience of my parishioners who have come to me as you have."
After seeing the changes in his face, in his eyes, Carmen was not surprised by his response. She was even ready for it.
"All right, Father," she said. "If this is because of the stress and strain brought on by Stephen's illness, and I'm not saying it isn't, I'm just...
She closed her eyes and thought a moment about what she'd just said.
"Yes, I am saying it isn't, because I know it isn't. What about Laura? She wasn't around when Stephen was sick. She didn't feel any of that stress, none of it. What about my neighbor, who doesn't even want to be in my house?
She was the one who called and said there was a green woman glowing in the upstairs window. We didn't see it, but she did, and she didn't experience any of the stress and strain of Stephen's illness.
But I suppose she knows about the history of the house.
Well, yes, but she doesn't...
That's very important. You see, Carmen, death is something that frightens all of us, even those of us who know that it should not. This house used to be entirely dedicated to death.
He shrugged.
It seems perfectly natural that anyone who knows of its history would be afraid of it, because of what it used to stand for.
With a miserable sigh, Carmen leaned forward and buried her face in her hands.
You don't believe me,
she mumbled into her palms. After remaining silent the whole time, Laura spoke up and said,
Father, I don't mean any disrespect, but please listen. Aunt Carmen's not crazy. There's something going on in this house that doesn't have anything to do with stress or strain or Stephen's cancer. There's something. Well, I don't mean to tell you your business or anything, and like I said, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but there's something evil and sick in this house, something that means to harm us. So please, please, Father, don't ignore it.
Father Wheatley leaned his head way back and rubbed a finger back and forth, thoughtfully just beneath his lower lip, as he stared at the ceiling. Then he sat forward, folded his hands between his knees, and asked,
Would you feel better if I blessed the house?
Carmen lifted her face from her hands, trying to hold back the tears that were fighting to fall, and said,
Oh, please, Father, would you?
Certainly.
He stood.
That would be no problem at all. I'll just go out to the car and get my bag.
While he was gone, Carmen leaned back on the sofa and said,
He doesn't believe me. He thinks I'm crazy. But it really doesn't matter as long as he's going to bless the house, right?
Laura said.
I mean, that's gotta help. And maybe, well, just maybe he'll see something, or hear something, or feel something.
Carmen just shook her head, eyes looking wary, as Father Wheatley came back inside. They remained on the sofa as he blessed the living room by sprinkling holy water from a bottle and reciting the blessing, their heads bowed reverently. They still remained there as he went through the entire house, blessing each room, one after another. As the father's muffled voice droned on in other parts of the house, Laura put her hand on Carmen's and whispered,
Don't worry, Aunt Carm. This is probably going to change everything, really.
Timidly, she added,
You've got to have faith in God, that's all.
Carmen knew she was right. For her to remain doubtful and afraid was an insult to God. She had to have faith that the blessing would make a difference, that it would end the strange incidents that had plagued them. But she could not stop thinking about Father Wheatley's obvious disbelief. If he were just going through with the blessing to patronize her, if he didn't really mean it, would that make a difference? When Father Wheatley was finished, he returned to the living room and smiled at them.
Well, I'm finished. I hope it helps.
You hope it helps, Carmen thought. Her fear was realized. He'd done it just to appease her. Father Wheatley held up a hand.
But if I might make a suggestion, you should consider some sort of counseling. I mean, all of you, your whole family. You've been through a great deal.
He gave them a smile that was meant to appear comforting.
I think you might benefit from it.
Laura squeezed Carmen's hand and looked away from the priest. Carmen bowed her head, hoping Father Wheatley wouldn't see the doubt in her eyes. After the priest had left, Laura said,
He didn't sound too believing, did he?
Carmen shook her head.
Yeah, well, he's a priest, right? So maybe it'll help anyway, you know?
Carmen didn't respond for a little while. Then, almost imperceptibly, she shook her head, very slowly. After seeing the doubt in Father Wheatley's eyes, the look of disbelief on his face, she suddenly realized how Stephen must have felt, how they must have made him feel. The whole time he was trying to tell them there was something wrong with the house.
21. Physical attacks.
The morning Father Wheatley was supposed to come, Carmen had been too nervous to do the breakfast dishes and, instead, had stacked them neatly in the sink after giving them a cursory rinsing. After he left, she changed into a baggy shirt and jeans, went into the kitchen, and began to wash the dishes. Laura had offered to help, but Carmen had said, "No, no, you stay here and watch TV or something." She wanted to be alone for a while. She wanted to think about the things she'd done and said to Stephen, the things they'd all done and said to him. She was standing at the sink washing the dishes when she felt a pinch on her behind. She chuckled, and, still holding a plate in her wet, soapy hand, turned around saying, "Stop it, Peter," as she looked down expecting to see him. He wasn't there. She stared at the empty space on the floor for a moment, then felt another pinch. There was a third pinch, and then she felt fingers. She knew they were fingers because she'd felt Al do the same thing before, but playfully, slide between her legs and press upward. The plate she held slipped from her hand and shattered against the edge of the sink. Laura hurried into the kitchen, saying,
"Aunt Carm, what's wrong?" Well, it was..."
The hand pushed between her legs again and probed with strong fingers. Carmen grunted and jumped forward to get away from it.
"It's after you now, isn't it?"
Laura gasped.
"Like it was after me last night. Just go back in the living room, Laura, please."
She hesitated a moment, then did as she was told, looking over her shoulder, concerned. With suds still on her wet hands almost up to her elbows, Carmen left the kitchen and hurried down the hall to her bedroom, where she slammed the door hard and locked it, then leaned her back against it for a moment, trying to catch her breath. Her heart pounded in her chest. The back of her neck felt cold, and even as she leaned back against the door, she felt the alien touch again. Carmen threw herself forward with a muffled cry, not wanting Laura to hear her, and landed on the bed, but the hand moved with her, holding on, all the while, fat fingers groping. She struggled to sit up, but suddenly there were more hands on her body, pressing her arms, shoulders, and legs to the mattress as one of the fingers entered her hard and roughly. Carmen could not hold back her cry of pain, but it didn't end there. Something longer and fatter than the finger, something that even throbbed, shoved itself into her rectum. Carmen's entire body stiffened. The thing moved in and out furiously, ripping at her.
"Oh, please,"
Carmen gasped. There was a knock at the door.
"Aunt Carmen, you okay?" "Please, Jesus, in the name of Jesus, stop, in the name of Jesus."
The bedroom door opened, and suddenly, everything stopped. The hands let go, the fat, throbbing thing pulled out of her, and Carmen was left on the bed, shaking uncontrollably, sobbing. Laura hunkered down beside her and put an arm around her shoulders, asking,
"Aunt Carmen, what's wrong? What happened?"
Carmen could not speak. She could not give Laura an explanation. She simply shook her head as she tried to catch her breath and regain her ability to speak.
I don't know, Laura. Something attacked me. Something..."
Her lips pursed and her hands clutched the pillow as she tried to find the right word.
"Something, hurt me?"
she hissed, her voice quivering with disbelief as she spoke. When Laura spoke, she sounded near tears.
"Oh, God, I knew it. I knew that's what it was. Oh, God, it's still here. The blessing didn't help. Oh, God, Aunt Carm, what are we going to do?"
Carmen realized that more than anything at that moment, she wanted off that bed, and she pushed herself away from the mattress quickly. In an instant, she was standing beside Laura.
"Well, for a little while anyway,"
Carmen said.
"We're going to get the hell out of here. You, me, and Peter. But first, I'd like to take a shower."
Carmen felt filthy, vile. It was a relief when she stepped beneath the hot water. She covered her body with soap lather and scrubbed herself hard with a washcloth, hoping to scrub away the dirty feeling of violation. After scrubbing for several minutes, crying quietly, she stepped forward to rinse off under the spray. But the shower curtain moved, and although she saw no one there, she knew she was no longer alone. A foreign sound suddenly meshed with the hiss of the shower, meshed and then, after a moment, separated and formed words in a voice that was deep, rough, and resonant.
I want to roll in bed with my two favorite playthings. You and Laura. I want to fuck you. I want to fuck you until you scream.
Then the voice laughed a long, cruel laugh, and the attack began. Hands clutched her shoulders from behind, spun her around, and slammed her hard against the wet tile. She started to cry out, but her lips were smashed against the wall. The laughter continued as something slammed into her hard, pulled out, slammed in again, and again, and again, and again. Hands squeezed her breasts hard, pinched her nipples until pain shot through her chest, up her neck, and down her abdomen. And yet there was no one there. Carmen pulled her face away from the tile, sucked in a deep breath along with the moist and humid spray of shower, and screamed as loud as she could. But it continued, the pounding inside her, the painful crushing and pinching of her breasts. Then the bathroom door opened, and Laura screamed.
"Aunt Carmen, I'm here. What is it? What's wrong? What is it?"
It stopped. Carmen found herself leaning against the wall, her body covered with lather that began to run down to the floor of the tub with the shower spray. She pushed away from the wall, her hands slipping over the tile, turned, and pulled away the curtain.
"It was here,"
she gasped, her voice hoarse.
It attacked me again. It did the same thing to me again."
Her tears were washed away by the shower, and she folded her arms over her breasts as she sobbed.
"Just get out of there," Laura cried. "Please, just get out of there so we can leave."
Carmen nodded.
"I am. I will. I'll be out in a minute. Go get Peter for me, okay? Make sure he's all right."
She rinsed quickly, left the shower and began to dry off furiously, not caring about whether her hair was dry or not. With Laura and Peter at her side, she dressed fast, gathered up a couple of Peter's toys, and they left, with no idea where they were going. They drove around town for a while. They went to a nearby shopping mall, where they had ice cream, let Peter ride a small mechanical spaceship for a quarter, and did some window shopping. They kept moving, kept their attention diverted, and did not think about what had happened at the house. After a few hours of trying to lose themselves in the safe and anonymous crowd of shoppers, Carmen realized how late it was and decided that, as much as she dreaded returning to the house, she had to get back so Stephanie and Michael wouldn't come home from school to an empty house, or at least one that appeared empty. They did some quick grocery shopping for dinner, then headed home. When they got to the house, they climbed to the porch and stood at the door, staring. With a nervous clumsiness, Carmen took the keys from her purse, found the right one, slowly slipped it into the lock, turned it, and they entered. There was nothing out of place. There was nothing unusual waiting for them. Clutching a bag of groceries in one arm, Carmen turned to Laura and said,
"What do you say we just go ahead and start dinner? Take our time, have some fun, and forget about everything."
Laura's eyes were wide as she looked around, taking cautious steps along the hall. She nodded her head and said,
"Yeah, okay."
And so they did. They unloaded the groceries in the kitchen and started dinner. Stephanie got home first. They told her nothing, just kept her in sight. When Michael came home, he asked if he could go to a friend's house down the road until dinner, and Carmen gave him an enthusiastic yes. She was relieved to have him out of the house. By the time Al came home, dinner was nearly done and nothing had happened. Carmen gave him a kiss when he came in and headed for the shower. She felt guilty, just as guilty as if she'd been unfaithful to him. She felt she needed to tell him about what had happened, but how? What could she say? What would he say? Maybe he'd think she was crazy, like Stephen, and get angry and not want to get near her. He might even leave her. After all, if he thought it was just her imagination, if he thought she was imagining such things, things like that, maybe he would think there was something wrong between them. She decided she wouldn't tell him. At least, she would resist the urge to tell him as long as possible. Dinner was quiet. There was little talk, just a lot of dinner noises, forks clanking against plates, chewing, drinking. When it was over, Carmen and Laura washed the dishes, whispering to one another about whether Carmen should tell Al or not, about what they were going to do. Laura suggested she tell him, because it was only inevitable that something would happen to him, too. What then? She insisted that he should know. As much as Carmen didn't want to admit it, she thought Laura was right. After dinner, Al settled in his chair with a beer to watch television. When the dishes were done, Carmen went to him, hunkered down beside the chair, and put a hand on his arm.
"Can we talk?" she asked quietly.
"Sure," he said, nodding.
In the bedroom?"
He frowned slightly.
"You okay?"
"Well, let's talk first, all right?"
They went into the bedroom, sat on the edge of the bed, and Carmen told him, in a nervous and halting voice, everything that had happened that day. The expression on his face changed again and again as she spoke. It went from comical disbelief to serious consideration to anger and then to blank shock.
"You're serious, aren't you?"
he whispered after a while.
"Yes, I'm serious. You think I would joke about something like this?"
I don't know. I'm wondering, well, how long has this been going on?"
"It just happened today." "Why? I mean, why would you ask a question like that?"
"Well, I just wondered if... I mean, I just thought that maybe..."
Suddenly, Al burst into tears and buried his face in his hands, his shoulders shaking with sobs. Carmen was shocked. She just stared at him for a moment, then leaned forward, put an arm around his shoulders, and held him close.
"Al, what's wrong? What's the matter?"
Through his tears and sobs, he said,
I was afraid to tell you that things have been happening to me, too."
She clutched his shoulders.
"What things?"
"Oh, just music and voices and just things. I've been telling myself it's nothing. I didn't want to think that one night, after I'd taken all the light bulbs out of their sockets downstairs, Michael woke me up and said his light was on even though there was no bulb in the socket, and, well, I went downstairs and it was glowing, Carmen. The light was on, but there was no bulb. There was nothing except light coming from that thing."
"Why didn't you tell me, honey?"
"Because I didn't want to tell myself that I saw it, but there was more. Music coming from downstairs, voices like a party. Late at night, and the bed vibrating."
"You told me that was because of the refrigerator upstairs."
"I was lying. I just didn't want you to know. I knew better. It was vibrating. It wasn't from upstairs. There was... yes, there was something wrong. There's something wrong with this house. There's something in this house."
She waited a long moment, then leaned close to him, her arm around his shoulders, and whispered into his ear,
"Stephen tried to tell us that, and now he's in a mental hospital."
Al shook his head.
No, I think it was more than that with Stephen. I really think there was something wrong with him. He changed. He became hostile. It was something more than this. I really think that."
"Okay, maybe. But he was trying to tell us about the house."
He sucked his lips between his teeth and said through more tears,
"You don't think I know that? You don't think that's killing me?"
She nodded.
"We both know it now. So what are we going to do?"
"We can't afford to move, that's for sure. Not right now, anyway."
"Okay, so what are we going to do?"
He shook his head, tears glistening on his cheeks.
"I don't know, sweetheart. I just don't know."
22. A Prison Without Bars. As that winter passed, slowly and torturously, the events in the Snedeker household escalated and tensions increased. The mood inside the house seemed to grow darker along with the weather outside. It grew increasingly worse as the clouds darkened and it began to rain. Worse still, as snow began to fall and turn to thick, icy mud beside the roads. Everyone in the family moved through the house expecting something horrible to happen. More often than not, they weren't disappointed. Things moved of their own volition. Everyone, at one time or another, heard voices. They saw shadows that weren't there. They spotted things rushing by them from the corners of their eyes. Small sections of the house were inexplicably colder than others. Stephanie had moved back into her room with Laura, and Peter had moved back into his room as well. So Michael was left alone in his room downstairs. Very late one night, he came running up the stairs screaming for his parents. They awoke instantly and rushed into the hall, where they found him running toward them, arms spread and eyes round.
"Mom! Mom! He came back!"
Michael shouted, throwing his arms around Carmen's waist.
"Shh, Michael, who came back?"
she asked, holding him.
That guy Stephen and me saw. He came to me last night."
"Oh, it was just a dream, sweetheart, that's all. Just a dream."
Michael backed away from her, shaking his head and insisted.
No, it wasn't just a dream, it was more. I mean, I was still in bed, but I was awake and I couldn't move, I was paralyzed."
Carmen and Al exchanged a long look, and Al gave her a slight but helpless shrug.
"Would you like to sleep somewhere else tonight, honey?"
Carmen asked Michael. After a moment, he nodded.
"Can I sleep on the couch?"
he asked quietly.
"Sure you can. I'll get blankets and pillows from the hall closet."
She turned to Al and whispered,
"You go on back to bed. I'll be there in a minute."
Once she'd set up a bed for Michael in the living room, Carmen tucked him in and gave him a kiss.
"Mom, if he comes again, can I call you?"
"Sure you can, sweetheart. You just call and I'll be here."
Back in bed, Al stared up into the darkness as he whispered,
"This is gonna keep up and get worse, isn't it?"
"I don't know,"
she whispered back.
"What are we gonna do if it does?"
"I don't know."
He reached over and took her hand in his. It took them quite a while to get back to sleep. After that night, Michael began sleeping on the living room sofa regularly. Unlike Stephen, he heard no protests from his parents, and no one in the house complained. In fact, they were very cooperative. One morning, while he was getting ready for school, Carmen offered to bring a few things up from his room and put them in the hall closet, so he wouldn't have to go downstairs. He accepted her offer eagerly and told her what to get for him. She waited until early that afternoon to go downstairs. Somehow she just kept remembering there were other things to do around the house. It took a few hours for her to admit to herself that she just didn't want to go downstairs. She knew what was down there. Funeral things, burial things, death things. Things she didn't want to be near. Besides that, many of the frightening events that had happened in the house had happened down there. Things that Stephen had tried to tell them about. Things they had ignored. But she had promised, and someone had to go downstairs. Finally, she did. She told herself she didn't have to go any farther than Michael's room, that all the really bad stuff was deeper in the basement, and that she really didn't have anything to worry about. But when she went downstairs, something happened to her for the first time. It was something that would happen to her again and again throughout the coming months. When it happened, she was taking socks and underwear from the floor to be washed, clothes from the backs of chairs and from the closet for Michael to wear to school, and clean socks and underwear from dresser drawers. Suddenly, she froze. There was a feeling in the air, as if it were shifting, being stirred up, as if something were cutting through it rapidly, approaching fast. Standing before Michael's dresser with socks and underwear in her hands, Carmen gasped as something enveloped her, something like a very dark shadow as thick as pudding. It engulfed her, swallowed her, embraced her entire body and held her in paralyzed terror for what seemed an eternity. And then it was gone, and Carmen collapsed to the floor, curled into a fetal position and gasping for breath. When she had finally collected herself, she looked at the clock. It had only been seconds, not an eternity. She got up, gathered Michael's things quickly, and hurried upstairs, still a little stooped and gasping.
"Hey, Carmen, what's the matter?
Laura asked, rushing toward her in the hall. In an instant, Carmen decided not to tell her. She straightened up, smiled a little, and said, "Oh, I guess it's just those stairs. I haven't used them enough, I suppose, because they wear me out."
"Oh, jeez, you scared me."
"No, nothing.
Nothing."
As she caught her breath, she put Michael's things in the hall closet, relieved that Laura had not caught her in the lie. Over the next few days, Stephanie cried out twice in the night because she said the shadow blob had moved through her room again. Laura had been asleep at the time and had not seen it, but after the second time, Stephanie said she did not want to sleep in her room anymore. Carmen didn't know what to do with her. She asked Laura if she'd mind sharing a bed with Stephanie to make her feel better, and Laura said that would be fine. Al became more and more uncomfortable with going to work and leaving them alone. But he had no choice. He'd been feeling very weak and helpless lately. He was used to having at least some control over the events that surrounded his family. When Stephen became so ill, that confidence began to chip away. And now, this. He felt that everything around him, his entire household, was out of his hands. Something he couldn't see and did not understand had taken control. Their home had become a sort of prison. They didn't have enough money to move at the moment. They couldn't just pick up everything and go get another place. They would be there for a while, with whatever was there with them. The weeks passed and turned into months, long, slow months, that stretched out beneath heavy clouds black as soot. The winter grew colder, more bitter. The children cried out at night. The voice spoke to all of them at times, from nowhere, at all hours of the day and night. Sometimes the smell of rotting meat, at other times the smell of human feces, assaulted them in one part of the house or another, a smell so thick and eye-watering that they were certain that, should they look down at their feet, they would find themselves standing in a pile of rotten, decaying filth. But there was never anything on the floor around them, and the smell only lasted an instant, a sickening stench wafting by in a breath, there and gone, almost tauntingly. But there were, at times, flies, real flies, that were really there, or at least seemed to be, but never for very long. One cold winter evening, a fuse blew, and Al went downstairs into the basement to fix it. He had long since replaced the light bulbs in all the sockets, and when he reached the bottom of the stairs, he turned on a light. When he flicked the switch, the opaque glass globe covering the fixture remained black, giving out mere speckles of the light from the bulb. As Al frowned up at the light, the blackness that seemed to be smeared over the glass moved, squirmed. As he listened in the silence, he could hear a faint hum coming from the blackness, a thing buzzing. The blackness was made up of flies, hundreds, maybe even thousands of flies crawling over the globe and twitching in a pool around it on the ceiling, their wings humming as they crawled over one another in black, writhing heaps. Al stared at them for a long moment, his jaw slack, eyes opening slowly from a squint to wide, gaping amazement, frozen in place, his fingers still on the light switch. His voice a mere breath. He whispered slowly, "Where in the hell did you come from?" All at once, the flies became airborne and flew in a swarm toward Al's face. Al threw his arms up protectively and let out a strangled cry of horror through clenched teeth, closing his eyes tightly, so surprised that he was unable to turn and run back up the stairs. He expected to feel them over him, feel the small vibration of their wings, the tickling twitching of their movements, but he felt nothing. Slowly, very slowly, he lowered his arms and opened his eyes. The flies were gone. They were nowhere in sight. He couldn't see them, and he couldn't hear them. There was a noise then, deep and throaty, sounding at first like a groan, then becoming a low, evil chuckle. It came from nowhere, but from everywhere around him. Al took a long, deep breath, set his jaw, crossed himself, and, although it took some silent, internal fighting, he ignored what he'd thought he'd heard. Opened the French doors and went into the next room, flipping on lights on his way to the fuse box. But he stopped a moment to take a careful look at the light overhead. There were no flies this time. He wound his way through the basement to the fuse box, opened it up, and reached into his pocket for the fuse he'd brought from the kitchen drawer. That was when the smell hit him. First, it smelled like roses, a strong, sweet, flowery odor. Al froze, looked around slowly, and allowed himself a slight smile. It was a good sign, the smell of roses. It was a sign of blessing, a sign of peace and safety, a sign from the Virgin Mary herself. Al's nerves calmed, the tensed muscles in his body relaxed slowly. The scent of roses had made him feel much better. In fact, he could still smell it as he replaced the fuse. And then, quite suddenly, the smell changed. For the worse. Al recoiled as the air filled with the odor of spoiled meat. He slapped a hand over his nose and mouth as he leaned over to retch dryly. Coughing as he stood, he slammed the fuse box shut, turned, and hurried back through the basement. The odor was everywhere. As he moved through it, the smell changed. It went from rotting meat to the smell of a vast, open sewer. The smell of massive, uncontained shit. The odor filled his nostrils and clung there, clogged them like thick grease. Al hurried through the basement, his hand over his face, but in the middle of the room that used to be Stephen's, he weakened and dropped to his knees. The thick, cloying smell was overpowering and literally pushed him to the floor, shedding tears and gagging. He walked on his knees for several feet, trying to get to the stairs, but in a moment, the smell was gone. Still on his knees, Al froze. He removed his hand from his face slowly, lifted his head, looked around, sniffed the air. It was gone. Moving quickly, he stood, hurried to the stairs and, in a rush, left the basement. The winter gradually began to recede. The snow began to melt, and occasionally, patches of blue sky appeared between the dark clouds. Al began to drink even more than usual. As the frightening events that took place in the house steadily grew worse, he felt weaker and more out of control, more helpless against whatever it was that had decided to target them. Carmen, on the other hand, held fast to her faith. She prayed more. She always kept her rosary with her. She wore a crucifix around her neck at all times. She refused to let the fact that Father Wheatley's blessing of the house apparently did no good whatsoever to sway her faith. She told herself that didn't matter, and just kept praying. Kept asking God to be with her family, to watch over her house and her family, to protect them from whatever evil, supernatural force was plaguing them. Sometimes they had conversations late at night in bed.
"You're drinking a lot,"
Carmen whispered one night as the two of them cuddled together.
"What do you expect?"
Al whispered back.
"Well, is it necessary?"
"What do you think? I mean, maybe that doesn't excuse it, but good Lord, I've been...
"Okay. Yeah, I know, honey. Things have been
fucking scary. Is what they've been.
But remember, we still have God on our side."
"So where is he?"
"He's here, sweetheart. If he wasn't, maybe we would have been hurt. Maybe we wouldn't be here."
Al pulled away from her and said, "Yeah, I know. It was on a summer evening that Laura went out on a date with a pleasant, tall, muscular young man who arrived to pick her up while Carmen was preparing dinner. Al invited him in, and they chatted for a few minutes until Laura was ready to go. Michael had gone down the street to a friend's house for the night, and Stephanie and Peter were quietly occupying themselves on the living room floor. None of the children spent time alone in their rooms anymore. They ate dinner in silence, as they had been doing every night for some time, and they ate it in the living room before the television. In spite of the silence, though, the tension was not as thick as it had been lately. There was more of a feeling of calm in the house, as if things might be all right, at least for the time being. After dinner, they watched some more television. Al had a few more beers, Carmen sipped a cup of tea, and eventually everyone started heading for bed. The children were reluctant, and Carmen kept waiting for them to ask if they could sleep with her and Al. She decided that if they did, She and Al couldn't very well say no because they knew the kids had good reason to be afraid. But they didn't ask. Peter was very sleepy and shuffled, droopy-eyed, to his room. Stephanie asked if it was all right if she stayed awake in her room until Laura got home. Carmen told her that would be fine. After all, it was Friday night, and she didn't have to go to school the next day. Al went to bed first, and after she'd given the kids their goodnight kisses, Carmen joined him.
"Is it just me, or do things seem better tonight?" she asked.
"Yeah, maybe. A little, I guess." He was very reluctant to be too optimistic. They cuddled beneath the covers, unable to sleep for a while because they were waiting for, actually expecting, something to happen. But their room remained quiet and calm, and eventually, the two of them dozed into a light sleep. Carmen awoke to a scream late in the night. It took a moment for her to understand what the screaming voice